Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Is my caller online? We'll go straight to her. Okay, Claudia Hagadis Long, are you on the phone?
I certainly am. How are you, Patsy?
Fine, thank you so much, Claudia. And the name of your book is Our Lying Kin. Kin. I almost said king. Our Lying Kin. Oh, we do have
There's a little play on words
Yeah. Our Lying Kin. And as you probably heard, I was talking to Steve Barry. He's so amazing. His books are so amazing. It was lots of fun. But I wanted to talk to you today because when I first got your book, I thought, oh, this is... Well, one, there's so many things I like about the book, and you have to tell us, about the storyline. But I love the layout. I love the story about the two sisters. You know, on the one hand, it's sort of a serious book, and then on the other hand, you write sort of very light and funny stuff. So tell us about this book.
Well, thanks, Patsy. Yeah, I listened to your interview with Steve Barry, and it sounds amazing. And it's a little bit of a hard act to follow, but let's give it a try here. Okay, so Our Lying Kin is the second of the Zara and Lily series that I've started. And yes, they can be read in, any order that you wish, of course. But Zara and Lily are sisters. I'm not going to mince words, they're 60 and 59. And they are daughters of a Holocaust survivor and on their mother. And their father is the second generation survivor in the sense that his parents fled Hungary in 1910 and that era when, all the pogroms were going on. So there is a very serious background, as you say, to the story. And it's the first was Nine Tenths of the Law, which dealt with the mother's story. And Our Lying Kin talks a little bit more about the dad's story. But it's not about that in that sense, because Zara and Lily are busy sleuthing around and getting themselves in trouble and dealing with the pandemic, frankly. So, they're tight sisters. They're really close, but the pandemic has frayed their relationship, and so has what happened to Lily in Nine Tenths of the Law. So they've become more of themselves. Zara has become so rule following has become rigid, and Lily's been conducting a little bit of insurance fraud on the side. So, they're basically getting more and more different. And, right, and so as they start to look into things, the insurance fraud and the various other things that Lily's been up to, they start to kind of uncover and unwind their father's double life and discover the legacy that he had of, he's also post-traumatic and in an era where, John Wayne movies dictated the way men could handle their emotions. So he basically, that's a hard one to say. He basically, chooses anger as his way of lashing out and is living a double life.
And what's so great about it? First of all, I must say, rejected a lot of pandemic books. My nerves can't take them, and I hate when all the characters are wearing masks. I got one mystery story where everybody's wearing a mask all the time, and I thought, I don't know what these people look like. I can't deal with it anymore. But the pandemic is woven into the story here very nicely. I enjoyed the comments. I enjoyed the. It was good. You did.
Well, thank you. Because think about it this way. If you write a story about now, and you don't mention the pandemic, it would be kind of like writing a mystery or a romance of that taking place in, oh, I don't know, 1943 and not mentioning the war. I mean, it's what's going on. And so I had a choice. I could ignore it and just write my book, or I could put it in as it went along. And the problem with writing contemporary as opposed to historical is that with historical, you know how their wars and their pandemics and their elections all worked out, but what if I wrote it and then it ended up really different? I don't know, you know, it was kind of a hard choice there.
Well, I thought the way you did it was just perfect. Just, it's not, I can say, it's not so heavy that I got depressed. Because sometimes it's the books get really depressing, and they're so, it's of course the two sisters. There's enough banter between them and funny stuff between them that it keeps the book moving very nicely.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. You know, they are they're a couple of characters. I mean, in the beginning, they're really at each other's throats, and I think that was why it was important to include the pandemic, because that's really, the isolation made them so angry, I don't know, that they had to, like, battle at each other. And then as they get back together and they're close again, it's a healing.
And you weave in the story sort of a, as like not headlines, but sections where you have from the family scrapbook, you have little vignettes from the family scrapbook that then relate to the story. I like the way that you did that.
Well, thank you. I was trying to imagine, because Lily is going through their mother's papers and photographs and everything, and I tried to imagine putting together a scrapbook of their history. And so little bits and pieces, memories, everything people put in a scrapbook, they put in pictures and, you know, mementos, various things, and a lot of this just isn't pretty.
Yeah. true enough. I think it carries the story along. I love these little breaks where you read the scrapbooks, and then actually I found myself going back and reading some of the scrapbooks individually. You know, once I finished the entire book, I went back and just looked at the scrapbooks again. And I enjoyed that process.
I'm so glad. It's kind of revisiting an old family album, I guess, in some ways.
So, you know, of course, what is your background in writing originally? When did you get your first book published?
Well, you know that I'm a lawyer, right?
Yeah. Well, and of course, right. You know, Steve Barry was also a lawyer for 30 years. So you lawyers
yes,
are...
I was listening to the interview, and I wanted to talk about the 16th Amendment, and I thought, wait a minute, no. That's his story, not mine. But, you know, lawyers, we tend to get excited about that sort of thing. But anyway, I've been writing for a long time, about 20 years, and I self-published a mystery, which was not terrible. And then I wrote, and you can't tell anybody this, okay, but I wrote women's erotic fiction under a pen name.
Okay.
And, yes, and I'm not going to tell you my pen name. And so that was, it pays well. But anyway, that kind of got me good at describing things, let's just say that. Always remember to count your limbs. But anyway, so then I, yeah, think about that for a second. And then I decided I wanted to write something relatively serious. So I wrote Josefina's Sin, which is in 1590 in colonial Mexico. And a lot of people don't know about colonial Mexico with, you know, the Spanish viceroyalty there and the Inquisition reaching all the way to Mexico. And I wrote that and got an agent, and Simon & Schuster published it, and I almost fell over in shock, you know. And so that was 2011 that it came out. And that was followed by two more historical fiction in colonial Mexico books, and one is The Duel for Consuelo, and the one after that is Chains of Silver. And then I wrote one about women in the labor movement in San Francisco, but you can't sell a book like that. So I ended up making it from, you know, the point of view of a prostitute, and that sold the book. And then I stopped and thought, what do I want to write next? And I thought, well, my mom had passed away, and a year after she died, my dad sat down with me and told me her actual story from World War II, which was horrific. She had kept it very, very quiet. It came out in little pieces that we didn't understand. And I thought, and he said, write her story. And I thought, I don't want to write her story. That's her story. So I wrote about two sisters who are, you know, dealing with their mother's trauma in the second generation. And I also made it so that they solve the mystery. And these ladies were, you know, at that point, 59 and 60, or 58 and 59, because through the math, they have to be. And that was Zara and Lily and Nine-Tenths of the Law. Well, and then I said, there's more to this story. There's more to these sisters. So our Lion King.
Well, I think it's fantastic. It's lots of fun. I love at the beginning, and I like things that are just a little bit different from what other people have, something a little bit original. And I liked at the beginning how you wrote, about the cast of thousands or 10 wandering Jews. It reminded me that, you know, when you have 10 Jews and they all have 10 opinions, you do
11,
have a,
actually.
11. That's true, 11. 11 opinions, always.
Yes,
it's true.
We always say two Jews, three opinions.
That's it. We do. And it's true. And I love that. I love that right at the beginning. And I thought it was just like, well, you're clever. You're a clever writer in so many ways, with the layout, the design, you know, the having the scrapbook and this opening, I thought was just wonderful. It's just fun. It makes it interesting. And of course, the story, and we're, can we mention the object? Do you want to mention the object?
Yes, of course. Of course. I believe that you're referring to the stolen menorah.
Yeah. Yeah, we can mention that. There is a stolen menorah, and that is the very important, that part of the storyline about a menorah. And I think that, again, very clever, very smart, and it keeps people turning the pages.
I'm glad. Well, you know, the actual story of the menorah is that the true story is that when I was 21, my mom and I went to the Jewish Museum in New York City, and she did exactly what Aurora does in Nine-Tenths of the Law. She walked up to this showcase of menorahs, and she pointed to it, and she said, "We had one just like that." And I was 21, and, you know, I was a little bit of a jerk. And I said, "Oh, yeah, that's really?" And she said, "Again, we had one just like that." And I didn't realize what she was trying to say to me was, this was mine. And, you know, she did go through the Holocaust. Everything she had, everything she knew was taken and destroyed. And it was remembering that after my dad told me her whole story, I thought, you know, I wonder if that was hers. And what would I do now to get it back? And that was the spring for Nine-Tenths of the Law. And then, of course, in Our Lion King, that menorah goes on a little bit of an adventure again. And again, like you say, I try to, you know, as we do, to survive tragedy, we make jokes. And I've always done that. The more upset I am, the funnier I am. And so the book is funny.
It is.
Yeah.
It is funny.
And you know, it's what we do to as a people. It's what we do as individuals to survive.
Well, I can tell you one thing. I was president of Hadassah here in St. Petersburg, and this book I would pick up so fast for our reading group, our book club.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, yeah, I'm in Hadassah up here, and it's hard to get anything right during, we're just coming out of the pandemic in truth, and so we're still kind of remote and various things. So I would love it if they did.
Not just every Hadassah, every library group, they should just pick this book, because you want a book that, particularly when it's a book that covers something in the Holocaust, but you can't do something overwhelming that is so depressing that at the end nobody wants to eat the snacks,
Right.
I've been to a few like that where it's almost so much, so overwhelming that your heart is broken. But in this one, yeah, your heart is broken, but you're also laughing a lot.
Because heart's broken, but you'll survive.
And you'll eat.
But yes.
Yeah. So, especially around the time when we have Hamantash. And boy, we could dig through the Hamantash with this book.
Oh, man, yeah. Well, that's coming up. That's, what is it, a week?
I have it on my mind. Once you bake Hamantash, and your mind is on Hamantash,
start thinking about it, you can't stop.
Exactly. I should have a Hamantash party and have everybody read this book, because it just feel that it's just right.
Well, thank you. I'm very proud to hear you say that. I'm in awfully good company there, looking at the list of people that you've been interviewing, because of course I went to the website, and being a lawyer, of course I prepared, right? And can't help that. And I thought, wow, I don't know, these are awfully famous people here.
You saw that I talked to the ambassador from Israel. Wasn't that fun?
Amazing. And then I also saw you talked to Philippa Gregory, and I don't know what I'm gonna say with all these people, but I always find something to say.
And you have something to say with this book, because Our Lion Kin is lots of fun to read. It's a great book. The mystery is wonderful. Your characters are wonderful. And you're a joy to talk to. So do you have a website you want people to go to?
Absolutely. Go over to www.claudiahlong.com. I don't have the Haggadis in there, because that would make that website unfindable. But it's claudiahlong.com, pretty simple. And I'm on Facebook. Do find me on my author page, because I'm very active over there. And on Instagram at Claudia Long Novels. And I am anywhere you want to find me, you will find me. And my publisher is Cosma Press, and they have a website as well. And so please do come along and find the book, Our Lying Kin. And the one before it is 9/10 of the law, and there will be another.
Okay, well, and then you
yeah,
will
I don't
be
know if
back.
I'll get to see Barry 17.
And you will be back here. Claudia, I look forward to having you back here. As soon as the new release is out, you let me know, and you'll be here, okay?
Thank you. I'm greatly honored, and it was a pleasure to talk to you.
It was a joy to talk to you. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Take care.